welcome to the Auto Blog Podcast. I'm Dan Roth. Joining me this week is Zach Bowman. What's up, Zach?
I am here. I'm doing this. How's it going,
guys? Jeff Ross. What's up, Jeff?
Good evening, guys.
So we will start off with the Auto Blog Garage, but first, snow tire season is nearly upon us, and I know that it doesn't matter to you guys, like Jeff, you're in Florida, and Zach, you're in Tennessee, but let me tell you, when it gets chilly, there's this white stuff that magically falls from the sky. And, you know, I tend to take the Thanksgiving holiday as a temporal signpost that it's time to put the winter tires and wheels back on my cars. So if you don't
Didn't
have...
you just take the winter tires off your car?
The winter tires and wheels are still on one of my cars.
Oh, so you're set.
I'm set, kind of. It's a five-year-old set of Blizz X that I got from the tire rack that I need to replace. So anyway, the Thanksgiving holiday is coming up, and I go, hey, I should switch the tires over. Because if you live somewhere that sees regular snow, ice, freezing temperatures, general winter misery, and you don't have winter tires or wheels or tires and wheels, you should check out the tire rack. TireRack.com, tire and wheel packages. They'll fit your car. They'll ship to your door. They got partners in your town, that will outfit your car. While you can also check out the accessories, upgrades like brakes, suspension, lighting, engine tuning. So TireRack.com, they sponsor the podcast. They're awesome. And let's start with the Autoblog Garage. And speaking of awesome, Jeff Ross, you're driving something that's probably the closest we're going to come to awesome this week.
Yeah, it's probably the awesomest of the evening, and it's the 2013 GLK 350 from Mercedes.
Right, so I said the closest we're going to come to awesome.
Yeah, that just says we're going downhill from here, I guess. So, I mean, as far as, like, I guess this is like a family-type luxury thing. It's not enthusiastic whatsoever, but I could see the people who don't really want enthusiastic but want a Mercedes, they would like this.
I think it's the people who want a Mercedes. It's not even family type unless you're a very small family, because it's not that big.
No, you could. There's enough room for two parents and three kids, probably.
Three kids?
You are out of your mind.
It's little normal kids. Not okay. Maybe not American kids. Maybe the German kids.
German kids are big, man.
Yeah, they eat the sausages.
Turkey kids are wide. German kids are tall.
Growing up in Spätzle and.
Okay.
Worst.
Spätzle and worst. Okay, we just shot holes in completely through your theory that it's a good family vehicle. Carry on.
It's a good personal luxury vehicle then.
If you don't
want anything too exciting.
If you are a young lady going to school in New England, this is the car for you.
No. No. If you are a Jersey girl going to school in New England and Daddy Warbucks wants to buy you a car, this is the car possibly for you.
Really? Oddly enough, the only person I know who actually owns a GLK, she's in her early 20s. Her dad just bought her a GLK. And I would have to say she's from New England.
Bam!
England, really? This is one of those cars that I expect to see at Boston University with out-of-state plates. Mm. At the management school. That's all I'm saying.
All right, so what do you think there, Mr. Roth?
The GLK, I think it sucks. It's a pox upon the Mercedes brand, not because of what it is, but because of how it's executed.
Yeah, but it's what they needed to do. Everyone was going small, and
it's what they needed to do, but it's not how they needed to do it.
Right.
Do you think it matters? I mean, it's a CUV with a Mercedes badge. I mean, that's basically a recipe for minting money. It's
Zach,
like,
what did you call it before we started?
It's the nicest Subaru Forester you'll ever drive.
Right.
It's 100% true. I mean, you look at the styling on that thing, and it the parallels between that and like an I would say like 04 to 06 Forester are pretty similar. It's kind of scary. I don't know. I haven't driven the GLK. I've crawled around in one at the auto shows and such. I mean,
it looks tacky. Tacky and cheap.
No, I don't think it looks tacky.
The outside looks old. It looks aged. I mean, like late 90s boxy. But inside, it feels good. It's comfortable. It doesn't have too many buttons. I hate cars with too many buttons.
You're an auto rider for sure. I don't like these buttons. Buttons and touch screens.
Oh, bitch.
Oh. So, okay. What's the price?
$54,925 with about...
I'm sorry, one more time?
$54,000.
No, listen, let's...
His price is
$39,000. So $55,000.
Yes.
For a GLK.
But it starts at under $40,000.
I don't care. You could buy a CTC wagon for that. Well,
No one would. I mean, that's just how that goes.
Yeah. But I'm just
saying. A lot of money. Sweet criminy. That's a stack of cash.
Well, I mean, like all the German brands, though, they get you with the options. I mean, here's $3,000, $2,000, $3,000. I mean, all the options are like a used car by themselves.
And the passenger seat will be another $4,500.
Yeah, I mean, I do have to say that nobody... Really, what you need to work out is what the monthly payment would be on this in terms of lease, because nobody's going to buy this. So that would be my question.
And I'm sure it would still be about $500 with like $3,000 or $4,000 down.
Yeah, I was going to say...
But when it's daddy's money, who cares?
Amen.
Yeah. So I guess the verdict is none of us really like the GLK. Sorry, Mercedes. You'll have to...
The thing is,
I bought a Forester.
X3, right? That's.
Oh, the X3 is so much better than the GLK.
Right, that's the obvious go-to.
It did not used to be. Well, it did not. It was not any better than the GLK. Now it's much better than the GLK. It's also bigger. See, that's the thing. Like, you look in the class, the GLK is... It's tiny. And I mean, for $55,000, you can get the full boat Volvo XC60, which again is not really enthusiast oriented, but
that's still a very nice vehicle.
I think in this segment, the Cadillac SRX is one of my favorites.
Yeah, no. Again, tacky.
But I like it. I like the way it looks. I like the way it drives.
Do you think the X1 is going to compete more with the GLK than the X3?
Possibly, yeah. But, I mean, what's Mercedes going to do? I mean, they've got the GLK, and then where do you go from there? The ML?
The A-GLA.
Is that a thing?
If they make a diesel GLA, is it going to be the GLAD?
Glad.
I don't think Mercedes' heart's in it right now. But, or maybe they're going to surprise us.
There were just some spy shots today of the GLA, and it looks a lot like the A-Class, which is a pretty sharp-looking car.
That's true.
Yeah, I like the A-Class. But the A-Class is everything that the GLK isn't. I mean, it's well-packaged, it's tidy, it's from all reports, very rewarding to drive. It's nicely done, where the GLK is just sort of this cynical, tacky, and... Don't get me wrong, I like cynical, but not GLK cynical. I
think the GLK is like a shopping mall special. Like, they just... That type of vehicle just to get people to buy it. They don't care what it drives like or looks like. They just want it to have that big, huge Mercedes logo on the front. And this has a giant logo on the front.
Mission accomplished. So, Zach, what are you driving?
All right. So, I've got the 2013 XTS all-wheel drive premium.
Isn't that such a nice car?
Okay, so I was really excited about this car because it looks really good, you know, outside. It's got a strong profile, and it's got the big cow catcher on the front and the big like faux fin LED lights in the back and the big wedge LED third brake light on the trunk lid. And
it is nice looking.
That's super sexy, and you crawl around inside, and it's really nice. I got to drive one for like two blocks a couple weeks ago, and it was at night, and you get in, and this car makes the best impression at night, because you get in and has like the really, really phenomenal ambient lighting. It's all tucked up under the brush trim work inside, and the cue system comes up and it lights up, and it's all very attractive, and it has an LCD gauge cluster, and that's all very nice. Except that it still drives like a LaCrosse, which is what it is.
But that's not necessarily bad, right?
It's not bad for Buick. man, okay, so I have no qualms with the 3.6 at all.
I do. I do.
No. That engine is a workhorse engine. It does its job everywhere. You've got to wring its neck, but that's okay. But
see, no, that's not okay. Not in a Cadillac. See,
exactly. That is my point. That is okay. My point. All it's right. Great in a Buick. You're fine with it in a Buick.
I'm fine with it.
You get in it and you're like, what is happening here? Yeah. And it's still front wheel bias, even though, you know, it's the all wheel drive and it's got that like fall back on its rear end and then sort of like, you know, scramble its front hooves while it figures out what it's doing feel to it. Even though it's very planted, the steering is very light. The brakes are
touchy, if I recall.
No, not touchy. At least not in this one. I don't know if this one had been ridden hard. Not by me. I mean, it had 6,500 miles when I picked it up. They just feel soft and not very confident. And part of that is this is a heavy car, all wheel drive trim. You're at 4,200 pounds. That's a lot of weight for this little V6, and the car feels it. I mean, just everywhere it feels heavy.
Yes. That was my argument when I had the XTS. You know, they did a front wheel drive LS V8 in the Impala SS.
Yeah.
Can't they please do it again? Like, if there's any car that's screaming for it, and it's not like it would make it extra nose.
You know what? You don't have to have a V8. You know, if you do. No, you don't. If you anybody, everyone has proven that you can stick a couple turbos on it. You can generate the power low. You can make it happen. It's just not there for me. And I was trying to think about this. You know, we put probably, I don't know, 700 miles on this car. We drove it up to Virginia and back. A lot of time to think about what's going on with the car and why it sort of rubs me the wrong way. And I think what gets me is that the Cadillac portfolio feels really schizophrenic in terms of driving feel. Like, you get an A4 or an A3, and it's got a certain characteristic set that's similar when you step into an A7 or an A8 or an A6. Like, they all have that sort of, this is an Audi essence. Like, if they blindfolded you and stuck you out in the middle of a salt lake somewhere and stuck you in the car, you would get the sensation, this is an Audi. It's a certain tautness of control. It's controls, both steering and brake and throttle. With Cadillac, it's not like that. The ATS feels, you know, fairly sharp and poised. The CTS, much the same way. And then there's this, which feels like, I don't know what this feels like. It's like someone's rental DTS from, you know, 5 years ago.
But
it's not cohesive, you know?
And okay,
it just seems like old, I mean, not old Cadillac, but the most recent Cadillac. I mean, they need to keep doing cars like the CTS and the ATS, and that, I think they went the wrong way with the XTS. I think they're trying to keep their clientele, like the people who were buying the DTS.
But how many of those cars were they selling? They could not have been selling enough of those for someone to be like, you know what, we really got to pin that market down. We got to hold it down.
Yeah, the guy across the street, okay, he's been a long time Cadillac buyer. Ever since we've lived here, he's had a Caddy. So he's gone through two of the front wheel drive. He had an Eldorado, I think, or an earlier STS, and then he had the later STS, and then now he's got a DTS. I don't think he tried the rear wheel drive STS before he got the DTS, did not like it, took it back, wanted the front wheel drive Caddy. So I don't know. I mean, somebody buys them, and the Caddy dealer in town has got a nice row of DTSs for sale, used DTSs. So somebody bought them or leased them at the very least. And I mean,
my argument against that, $58,430 with destination.
Yeah. But I mean, I'd rather buy that.
Granted, than the loaded, STS. Loaded to the molars. Like, it's you know, it's just got so much tech, and it'll do just about everything you want it to do, and that's great.
We should
and
talk about
gorgeous. I'm not. We'll get there. gorgeous leather interior.
It does have a beautiful interior. Like, okay, so other than the fact that it feels like you got to stab it with a cattle prod every time you want to actually go somewhere, how was it on the highway?
you know, on the highway, it's a, you know, it's a shout back to Detroit of old. You know, you point the nose at the horizon and you set the cruise and you sit back and you get out and you don't feel like you've covered any ground just because it's solid and
it's a caddy.
It's a caddy, baby.
I fail to see the problem because the people who want that car aren't going to want the CTS or.
But it doesn't have to drive like. I want to curse so bad. It doesn't have to drive like crap.
it doesn't drive like crap. It doesn't.
Oh, it does.
Okay.
It does.
But, I think
I get your point where it. The steering doesn't blend with the throttle. It drives like a Buick,
yes. Not a Cadillac. Well, it drives world class. This does not tango with BMW. It does not tango with Audi.
I would say it does. This car is like with the Volvo S80s and, I mean, the Lexus ES. It just...
Well, that's fine. That's fine. If Cadillac wants to play around in the freaking middle school of luxury, then do it. That's fine. Don't say, oh, well, we're going to saunter up and... punch Mercedes-Benz right in the face with the XTS.
See, oddly,
when it drives like a freaking Buick.
Okay,
good lord.
But I see your point because it doesn't drive in a cohesive manner. The steering, the brakes, the throttle, like it doesn't. There's not that harmony behind the wheel. I get it. Like the every system is okay on its own, but they don't really sort of meld into this great experience of a driver's car. Oddly enough, I think the car that it probably competes with, or the brand that it may compete with most, is Mercedes, the sort of gray lady of luxury marks, right? So, like for 58 grand, you could buy an E-Class, or you could buy the XTS, or you could buy a really, really loaded to the gills. No, I mean, no, 58 grand is like a C-Class and a half, so... I could see somebody going like, well, Mercedes or Caddy, but I don't think a BMW buyer is going to ever be moved by an XTS.
Right. Yeah, I don't think that's probably not going to happen.
Perhaps.
Other issues that I had. So you've got this beautiful interior and, you know, it's got that clever little storage area behind the capacitive controls. I'll get there, Roth.
Which I kept open.
Well, you just hold your horses. And then, like, to the left of the steering column, you have this, like, floppy, cheap, like, plasticky bin that just sort of flops open and rattles around. Like, what the hell is that? Don't put it there. Like, it just cheapens the whole experience. Like, it's not necessary. The car has some sort of weird squeak, like a moan when you come over. Like, my driveway has a sort of off-camber thing where you come onto the road.
That's its knees.
And you just hear it go, every time. And you're like, this is a freaking $60,000 brand new car with 7,000 miles. I better not hear the moans of the proletariat, is all I'm saying.
That's not the proletariat. That's cartilage loss. That's all right. Give it some glucose.
Right. And then you know, visibility, just like in the LaCrosse, blows. It's horrible. You're trying to put geriatrics in this car, and you can't see out of it to save your life. It's not good. The touch capacitive business has got to go, man. You got to stop it.
See, just, I think you were last week saying, it's not that bad, Dan Roth. Web of lies.
It's better than other applications.
It's better than my Ford Touch, but it's not much
better than my Ford Touch. But man, I was trying to come through town in a small town. It's not like it's super busy, but I was trying to come through town and just change the freaking radio station. God, I just wanted to rip the whole interior out. I wanted to just like turn Tasmanian Devil and just like emerge from the car with like seat foam like clinging from my teeth. I was just so angry and like. So at first, you know, you push the voice command button because typically the voice command system works very well. And you say it, and it says that content's currently not available. So you're like, okay, well that's weird. So then you wave your hand in front of Q, and then the screen comes up that you can finally choose your stupid, you know, radio station. And
did
it's like,
did it do this though? Did it screw with you? Did it go, oh, that button? Nope, not that one. And like move it at the last second, or like you
no, I didn't have that issue. I did have the issue where I accidentally opened the motorized bin behind the controls like five freaking times.
I kept doing that.
You know, I just none of these things were broken in cars, right?
Knobs. Knobs. I don't have a problem with knobs. I get in the cheapest cars. Do you like what I'm driving this week? I do not have a complaint. I don't drive swearing at it, saying, this infernal machine, like I do in high-end luxury cars that try to reinvent the wheel.
More troublesome than that, issues with the Q system. It will not use voice command to select audio over Bluetooth. You still have to... It won't list the artists in Bluetooth audio, so you still have to pick up your phone and look at your phone to pick artists out and play them. So which just defeats the whole purpose of the system.
These are things where, okay, first of all, the smart guys say, oh, well, if you didn't like the cue, like, touch buttons, why don't you just use the voice commands? Because I'm not Michael Knight. I don't want to talk to my car.
You know what? I will use the voice commands if they would freaking work.
If you're going to put voice commands in the car, make them control everything, or make them control nothing and don't put them in, because really difficult. Little,
like, trial and error when you're like having a back and forth, like, what can I say to my car? What can I not say to my car? I don't know.
Also, the iPod, like, that whole Bluetooth audio, that's a software issue. They can fix that. What boggles my mind is, how did that ever make it into a car? Like, it's clearly been in development for a few years. You would think would have figured that out.
We'll reach out to the Q guys, because they've been helpful in the past, and I would certainly like to hear their take on it. Like I said, it's better than a lot of systems on the road. It's just not as good as a freaking dial or a button. It's
distracting. I found myself over the center line a whole bunch of times with that.
Dan, don't worry about it. It has a lane minder system.
Oh, see, I shut all that crap off.
Leave that on, and it massages your butt every time you leave the lane. It's very nice. That's not a joke, actually.
It's true.
That is a thing. It happens.
Yeah.
I gotta say, overall, I was really disappointed with the car. I wanted it to be more ATS and more CTS in terms of, this feels like a Cadillac, and instead I just got LaCrosse, and I don't like the LaCrosse. I mean, the LaCrosse is fine, but it's only fine because it's a Buick, right? It's just, you sort of accept that sort of middling, well, you know, sure, whatever. That's not what a Cadillac is. That's not what a Cadillac should be, right?
So, see, I found my biggest complaint about the XTS was I wasn't nearly as disappointed as you were with it, because I think the interior is world class. It's very nice.
No, the interior is phenomenal. I mean, I would say the interior is easily on par. Well, it's slightly below what Audi's doing in terms of interior nicety on its upper trims.
Yeah, but it's Audi, and upper trim Audi can easily brush $100,000.
Yeah, that'll eat you alive.
So, you know, I'd give some of that. I mean, the thing that I felt was that the XTS just, it needs a more torquey powertrain. And for me, that says the effortlessness of the V8, which I can understand where everybody else would be like, no, turbo V6. No, because that's...
I forgot to touch on something briefly.
So touch.
1726 fuel economy.
Wow, that's not bad on the highway. That's for a car that...
17.
How did it actually do?
I don't know. I probably got around 22, 23. But I was, you know, coming down out of Virginia, you're running like 78 miles an hour or so, average. So, you know.
17, if it's 17, it's a heavy all-wheel drive car with an overworked engine. What do you want?
Yeah, better fuel economy, guys.
Okay, my guess would be that V8 with the variable displacement would actually do better.
Going back to this GLK, it's 1924.
Yeah, but that's a
truck. Wow, that's...
But it's lighter. I guarantee it's lighter.
Yeah, probably.
But the GLK...
Shaped like a brick.
No, then you have all...
Shaped like a brick.
Again, overworked engine. I don't know. Yeah. The GLK probably takes premium fuel, whereas the Caddy doesn't.
Does not, which is very nice. And it has that cool little, like, new gas filler with no cap, which I think is awesome.
Don't they just call that a rag down there?
No.
Yeah. That was funny to you as it was to me.
Yeah, sure.
The only thing I hope that Cadillac does not do with this car is add e-assist.
Oh, sweet Christ, no. That's
awesome. I mean, they did
That's
it.
The only thing that can make this experience work to me is adding e-assist.
Yeah. Although it might feel a little torquier depending on how they tune it.
Oh, it's not possible. I've yet to get in a car where I'm like, oh, this is so much better with the e-assist system.
Yeah, nothing's really better with e-assist. The only thing that's better with e-assist is fuel economy, corporate average fuel economy. That's the only thing that's better with it. It's a, yeah.
Anyway, what are you driving? I've beaten on the XTS one.
Well, I have the Folex of Jeeps, the Patriot. Yeah. I can see why people buy it. I don't mean those people who possess excellent or actually any analytical skills or perhaps vision. But I mean, like, styling wise, okay, it's a Jeep. Like, it's mostly convincing, although from certain angles, it's pretty horribly awkward because that's what happens when you try to make a Jeep out of a front wheel drive Mitsubishi. I mean, do you remember when this thing came out?
I do, yes.
The world pretty much, I mean, am I correct in saying the world gaped in horror?
I mean, that's probably accurate. Yeah.
Well, I think the Patriot looked bad, and then the Compass came along and made the Patriot look so much better.
It's true. You're like, yeah. Oh, at least he didn't buy the Compass, so that worked out.
I mean, it was the Compass is definitely the one that made everybody like completely double take, but for sure. But I mean, the Patriot is not and has never been a compelling product, and so I'm trying to think why. Do people actually buy them? And
have you seen how much a Grand Cherokee, a Wrangler, and a Liberty cost now? I mean, if you want to get into a Jeep,
right,
you're going to spend a lot of money. So I see this being a Jeep vehicle that doesn't cost a lot.
Right, sort of. I mean, I will say the total price on this Patriot Latitude 4x4 was $26,020. So
that's cheap.
That's not cheap. Okay. You're getting ahead of I made my little list here. People love Jeeps. And when I say Jeeps, I mean real Jeeps, you know, like Wranglers. Real Jeeps, Wranglers, are expensive. Patriots may sticker for ludicrous money against their competition that's so much better, because $26,000 for this is crazy ridiculous.
I bet you could get a RAV4 in the mid-20s, mid-to-high
20s. Get a RAV4 for, yeah. I mean, even the old Ford Escape was better than this, but I will say, Patriots don't actually sell for their sticker prices. So, looking at it, you will generally get a deal on a Patriot. Right now, Jeep is giving you $1,500 back, for example, on the Patriot. And you can lease one, like, way below $200. You can get a lease on a Patriot for, like, $130 a month if you look. So, and it probably won't be a four-wheel drive like this one. But, you know, that's just the trail-rated badge. But this is the cheapest way to get into a Jeep if all you want are round headlights and a 7-slatted grill. But I does this strike you as a Jeep?
No.
Right.
As a Jeep enthusiast, I do hate it. But I've driven it off road, and I was on the bumper of a Grand Cherokee, the top of the line Grand Cherokee, and the Patriot went everywhere the Grand Cherokee went.
Yeah, was that at like a Jeep event?
No, it was the Texas Truck Rodeo.
Oh, so it's still, I mean,
it's a pretty intense course they have.
Did anybody get hung up? Any vehicle?
A Honda Ridgeline.
Oh, yeah, there's a shock. Sweet Christ.
Every year,
catering to the lowest common denominator.
A Jeep Wrangler got stuck in the gravel, and then the best last year, a Dodge 4500 bucket truck got stuck in an off-road course.
Yeah, who takes a bucket?
Oh, I guess there are awesome.
But the Patriot is woefully terrible. By all rights, it should have died within a couple years of its launch, and yet, like, people bought them. I'm so incredulous about that.
Well, people buy lots of things. I see people driving around in Calibers.
Yeah, right. That's what this thing is. Like, seriously, the original Patriot nearly took a slice out of Shunk's finger with its like sharp edge dashboard.
I think all Chryslers in 2005 had that problem.
Yeah. And so the new interior isn't that bad. It's actually somewhat livable. It's kind of cave like. But you know, I mean, those are the sacrifices you make for style. It's kind of like sitting in an old Saab 900 because the windshield continues much further up, so you are sort of in this little bunker that you're driving. But it's just This is a $27,000 vehicle that's just so outclassed by its competition. Like, Kia Sportage, Hyundai Tucson, done. Not to mention that $27,000 will put you well into a Volkswagen Tiguan, Honda CRV. If you're looking for something that feels dated, you can go with a RAV4. Still a much better vehicle. And, you know, like, there's... The Patriot is infuriating because it's got just enough character to let
it... All right. What do you like about it? Let's go back. We've heard everything you don't like about it. What do you like about it?
Didn't you say you own an XJ?
I do not own an XJ.
Oh.
I like the XJs. I like the styling, honestly, and I like the usefulness. It's decently packaged for the most part. You know, but I guess what just kept sticking out to me was the poor fuel economies, 2023, and the really cheap build quality. Like,
it's an old machine. I mean, it's pre-Fiat.
Yeah, and it's like it's got this incredible little birdcage under the hood that the fender is actually attached to. If you look at the way it's built, and you open the doors and you see this, the paint is clearly not well applied in the door jams, which just screams cheap to me. I bet if you open the door on a Tiguan, you're going to see really nice, smooth paint all the way throughout. So I was very impressed with the interior upgrade that they did to it, because the original Patriot interior was awful. And now it's, I mean, they even managed to pad the door, the top of the door, which makes me happy. It makes me feel like they were thinking just of me when they did that. And maybe they were, because they were like, we're going to send every Patriot we make to Dan for the media fleet. But I don't feel like there's a ton to like here, honestly. Like, I think that if you were in the market for it, the best thing you're going to find is utility and price. And it's still a hot segment, hotly contested segment. There's a lot that's better for the same money.
Well, that's true, but I think a lot of this segment is populated by very, how do I say this, femininely styled vehicles, right? Like, the RAV4, for example, or the CRV, or the Escape. They're just sort of these anonymous, you know, CUV blobs, where this has some sort of, you know, sort of rough and tumble styling that I think appeals to people.
I do like the styling. I like the fact that with the trail rated off-road system, you get a lockable center differential. So I have no doubt that it would actually be a pretty good little billy goat in the snow, which is really what...
Is yours the trail-rated rig?
Yes. Oh, it's got the trail-rated badges.
Come on. Trail-rated for $25,000? Absolutely. I'd do that noise all day long.
That is a lot of money for something that's
It is a lot of money, but okay, my rebuttal there is that's a lot of money, but find something else that's going to have that sort of off-road capability. Jeep's pretty serious about that.
Come on. Really?
I don't think they're going to stick that badge on something. No, I don't think so. Find something else with a lockable center diff.
All right. I mean, you got me there.
What you got?
I'd have to research it. But
doesn't the Suzuki SX4 have a locking diff?
Yeah, the SX4 would get hung up on a like.
wait, that makes the Patriot look so great. That makes the Compass look good.
No, it doesn't. The SX4 has... See, there's charm, and then there's character. The SX4 has character. The Patriot merely has charm.
Oh, I mean, we got to move on. Sweet Lord.
I like the styling for the most part, but I honestly wish they had a better platform to work with and more money. But, you know, thank you, Daimler and Cerberus, and hopefully the Fiat-based whatever that replaces it will be better. So, sure. Yeah, well, moving on. The BMW M3 coming in 2014 is supposed to be lighter and have nearly 100 more pound-feet of torque than the 295 that its V8 was able to whip up, which it was like a 414 horsepower V8 in the last M3. And it only had almost 300 pound-feet of torque. I was surprised to learn that. But, you know, more power, less weight, because they're saying it's going to weigh about 3,400 pounds, like the old E46, which was probably the last of the truly great 3 Series cars. So, you know, more power, less weight. That's always good, right?
Always.
I was looking at the spec sheets on the M3, and I was always surprised in the 295. I mean, it just, for that car with so much horsepower and so little torque, it seemed out of place. So with that and the lower curb weight, it should be a lot more fun to drive.
Well, that V8, glorious noise. Glorious, glorious, just wind it out and let it scream for days noise. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that since they're going from the V8 to the turbocharged inline six, they're getting more torque. I am going to miss the noise of the V8, and it certainly did churn up good performance, but BMW knows how to make a turbo engine that really pulls. So, do you think, though, my concern is now they're making a lighter car, and they're actually giving it the engine that would be more suited to the heavier car, you know, a more torquey down-low kind of motor versus the higher strung power plant. I would think that the lighter car with the higher strung engine would be a better package. What do you think about that, Jeff?
I don't think it would be a bad thing. I mean, it seems like, you know, all cars nowadays are getting lighter, and I think that is just part of the process. I mean, they're using the lighter weight materials now, and I don't think it's not like they're pulling stuff out of it and it's just going to make it unbalanced. I think BMW is going to manage to do this and make it an excellently handling vehicle.
Well, if you recall, you know, when BMW made the switch to the V8, you know, from the inline six for the M3, the fanboys were just up in arms. They were just irate that BMW would put not only an extra two cylinders, but they would put it in a V configuration. It was blasphemy. And the next thing you knew, there would be dogs and cats living together. Chaos.
I don't know, man. That V8 sounded this
right,
close.
Right, to and everybody immediately warmed up to it. The instant they drove it, they just knew that this was awesome. And personally, I'm happy to see BMW move back to the Street 6. I think this is something that we'll probably see from a lot more manufacturers moving forward, just because you can only cram so much horsepower into a car and make it usable. I mean, the GT500 is a perfect example. Crap loads of power, but not necessarily faster than its closest competitor, the ZL1. So taking weight out of a car, putting more power into the power band in a usable space, I think both of those things are really smart decisions from BMW.
Yeah, but I'm concerned, and I'm certain this is just a silly concern, just that an M should be sort of the most precise, most widow-making 3 Series in that sense, you know? So, I mean, to put an engine that just like, well, it's going to have a lot more torque. It's basically like we took the big block out of the big old family car and we put it in the midsize car, like lazy torque
and
days.
No, and that's never been a bad thing. Taking the big engine out of the big car and putting it into the little car has never been the wrong move ever. that has always been the right move. That's always gotten someone a promotion, guaranteed.
But I mean this is the M3, and the knock on the M3 is that it's not as precise as it once was. It's not, you know, it's steering.
You can say that about BMW in general. I mean, I think that's just accurate about BMW in general.
Yeah, so
that's Zach.Bowman at autoblog.com. BMW owners, please. Anytime you're ready.
No, I don't think that's untrue. So I mean, that's something that actually might benefit this, because although I don't know that they're actually going to get any weight advantage from it. They're going from the V8 to a turbo. It's probably going to be sort of parity at that point. But you know, they're going to drop about 400 pounds, so that's not bad. But yeah, I still, they've got tuning to deal with.
That not bad. That's not bad. Dropping 400 pounds off of a chassis, right, is it's not bad in your book.
It's a pair of shunks. That's funny. It's a pair of shunks. But it's you know, it depends on how they deal with that lighter weight. You know, how does that equal a stiffer structure? Does it?
I'm sure it will. I mean,
see, and that's what I've heard about. I haven't driven the new 3 Series yet, but I hear that it is stiff, or it's so much stiffer than the previous M3, like the current, the 328. I just hear it handles better than some of the older 3 Series cars.
It may. I haven't driven It may handle better, but I've heard that it actually feels disappointing. And again,
it does. It feels softer in every way. It just
welcome
feels...
to the conjecture section of the Autoblog podcast, where maybe one of us of the three has...
No, hey, I have driven the new 3 Series, and I say that it does feel softer. It feels less BMW. It feels certainly less 3 Series. It just sort of middle of the road. I don't know. And, you know, I had 335i, you know, both the cars that I've, both the 3 Series I've driven have been 335i's, previous generation and this generation. And I would take the previous generation over the new Go.
So you'd take an E90. So, and that's the thing. It's, if they're benchmarking the E46, I think they'll do all right. Because that's probably, again, the, and when the E46 came out, from the E36, people are like, oh, it's gotten softer, it's gotten more, so yeah, and every time they do that, they're like, yeah, but look, it kicks, it's much better. The numbers don't lie. So,
well, that's you know, that's one of those things about driving a car. We're not talking about computers, we're talking about something that's emotive, right? That's why I'm sure the three of us will always say manual transmission over dual clutch. You can tell me that it's, you know, 3/10 faster all day long, and I'll just smile and nod and then walk away from you during the party. That's what will happen.
Yes, because really, I had another guy across the street in the house next door to the guy with the caddies, came up to me the other day. He called me sir. I was like, pardon me?
You're used to being addressed as Sonny, right?
That's yeah, I was
Sonny.
Yeah, it was 4-letter words. I just started looking over my shoulder like, oh, he's talking to me. But he has a 2005 Boxster S. So he was very interested in the new Boxster S I just had recently. And he's, you know, he admitted that he came and snooped while it was in my driveway, which is fine. But fine for him, not for anybody else. Stay away. But that was a PDK car. And he's like, why would anybody buy it? I was like, well, it's quicker. And he's like, yeah, everybody says that. I was like, honestly, I'd drive the manual if I were buying because it's more involving. I don't care about the speed. I'm never going to drag race it. I'm never going to go flat out for those numbers. I want the experience. And so for me, yeah, the PDK is great, and it can put the power to the wheels in a continuous flow with no brakes for shifting. And so that's a very good automated manual, probably the best. Anything other than that really tends to pale in comparison. And still, yeah, I'd go manual transmission. So I do hope that the next M3 doesn't have some sort of fancy, you know, triple coupling Gestriba or whatever.
To me, that argument about, you know, the dual clutch being quicker than a manual transmission always strikes me as similar to the argument that road bikers use, you know, road bicyclists use. You know, they're always so obsessed with squeezing every last ounce out of whatever gear they have, you know, and they'll get into these long, drawn-out conversations about how their shoes weigh, you know, half an ounce less than the other guy's shoes. I'll tell you what, that half an ounce is never going to be the defining factor for me. Right? I have enough ounces on my frame that that's not going to slow me down over the long haul, like that extra ounce out of the shoes. You know, and in the same token, that extra 3/10 of a second out of the dual clutch gearbox isn't going to be what slows me down on the track. I'm still a shitty enough driver that I am what's slowing the car down. So right. I'm not concerned about squeezing that extra last ounce out.
Yes, but
we are
then again,
way off the rails here.
Well, we don't buy BMWs, and I think the numbers do matter to the people that buy them, even if they never use them to generate said numbers.
Touche.
You know, lots of bench racing and being those guys at parties. But speaking of high-end luxury performance cars, Jaguar has said that they want to consider doing a small sedan and a utility vehicle again. Well, they've never done a utility vehicle. They did a small sedan, and in some way, it would be smart to have a Jaguar that competes with the 3 Series. And they tried it with the X-Type, which was universally unpraised.
For a good reason.
Yeah. come on. It had a nice
don't
interior.
Don't you defend this. You and the interiors, that's your go-to.
Where do you spend the time? You don't drive on the roof.
Drowning your sorrows in liquor if you bought an X-Type.
it was
well, I mean, the X-Type was what, like a Ford Taurus?
It was the Mondeo.
It was the Mondeo.
It was an attempt. I know they didn't say what kind of an attempt. They said,
you know,
an attempt.
I am all for this news, to be perfectly honest. You know what? If Jaguar thinks they can make money building a small SUV, CUV, and a sedan, rock and roll. Freaking go for it. Because you know what that means? That means they can build more F-types. And that's good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the Porsche model, right? Like, everybody thought the world was... Again, cats and dogs living together with the right. Cayenne. And I hated the Cayenne. I remember seeing it. The first Cayenne I ever saw was a Cayenne Turbo. We were on
same with the Panamera, right? And everybody just loathed the Panamera.
Despised it. And then I actually saw one in person. I was just like, oh my goodness. That is just like flagrant awesome on wheels.
That's, the dude who runs the Dirtfish Rally School out in Washington has a Trans-Siberia as his company car.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, it's just...
Yeah. I mean, that's all you need to say.
You're talking about Porsche. They have their own dealer network. Like, there is no other... It's not like they're selling a Cayenne next to a Tiguan. If Jaguar had a CUV, that would be on sale directly next to the Evoque and all the other Range Rovers.
Here's the thing. The Evoque stinks. And generally, Range Rovers are a single note. They're like Johnny Cash. They don't have any range, all right? And what they do...
And you're just trying to make me cry tonight, aren't you? Lord, you go from bashing the Evoque to bashing Johnny Cash. You just need to slow down, man. You just got to spread that out over...
It's just... It's what he did great... He did great. And just the same as Range Rovers and Land Rovers. What they do great, they do great. But they don't have a ton of range. And that's, I think there is room for a Jaguar crossover or utility vehicle. I think there's a lot less room, honestly, for a Jaguar sedan. Where are they going to get the platform? Clearly, there's nothing in the Jaguar Land Rover portfolio to pull from where they could... possibly do a new top hat on an Evoque and again make it Jaguarish and not Roverish. Although a Jaguar with a four-cylinder,
I just see all these cars going down to the premium small segment. I mean, you got the ATS.
That's where there's growth.
Yeah, and I could really see Jaguar making a ton of money down there, but
I could also see them completely losing their shirt.
If they do it right, though, if they do take the X type and do the complete opposite, I think they would.
don't make a front wheel drive Ford with ersatz XJ styling. Okay, what would it even look like though? I mean, how would they? Do you think they've developed the look enough to?
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
Well, no, but I think they've. I mean, the F type's a beautiful car, but it does not fit in with the other. The Jaguars. Everything else has the wide, you know, cat-like headlights. This has the Ferrari headlights.
Yeah, it does look very Italian. I mean, front and rear, that car looks very Italian.
Even the hips and everything about this car.
That's. I mean, they've said as much. That's more Jaguars are going to go that way.
But I have no problem with that.
Dan, that's what I'm saying. I just. It looks great as a coupe. Is it going to look funky as a sedan? Is it going to look like sort of like a Quattroporte where it winds up, you know, it's this high-end Italian thing, but it looks like a Buick? Like, I don't know. I'm concerned about how you take Jaguar and make it a small sedan or an SUV. They can pull off sedan, clearly. They can do sedan because they've got the XJ and the XF, so... They can do something, but...
And that crushingly sexy XF wagon...
Yes, I see it in the background.
Kills me. Kills me.
It's such a tease. But, you know, in terms of styling, let's stay on the styling tip. Volkswagen, they say clean and simple is in, like this is any kind of news. I felt, though, doesn't this feel like this is kind of an excuse for Volkswagen being Volkswagen conservative?
For not having an F-Type?
Yeah, or even an Elantra?
I mean, they've been doing the clean and simple since
it forever.
Since the original Beetle, I think.
Since Mr. Clean had hair. It's true.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if that's their thing, I mean, people are buying Volkswagens like crazy.
Yeah, although they did have to readjust their sales numbers for their sales projections for Europe because they're getting shellacked like everyone else on their way to.
Everyone's getting hurt.
Yeah.
And Volkswagen's got that crazy desire to be number one by
2018. Yeah. Yeah, which is bonkers. But I mean, yeah, Volkswagens have been crisp and clean since the original Golf and Scirocco that were, what, Giugiaro style back in like 74, 75, something like that. So,
Volkswagen's one of those companies that they'll put out the next generation and you'll look at it and you have no idea whether it's the old car or the new car. And, you know, I assume that's a good thing. You know, the report here talks to, you know, their design head Ancho Walter da Silva, who said that from their point of view, they're looking at it in terms of maintaining resale value for their customer.
That's such crap. Who?
I know. I'm just saying,
if they cared about maintaining resale value, they'd make cars that didn't break as much. Seriously, Volkswagen.
This is correct. But more telling, you know, his quote was, "People want to understand what they buy. There is a certain security in our design," which means people like boring. And I think that's they're rocking on.
I don't argue. Like, I think that the Volkswagens that we have now are clean and crisp and
very stylish.
They're handsome.
Very stylish, yes.
And I do think they have a timeless quality, but they have a timeless quality because they're not risky. And I'm not saying that you need to be risky all the time, but they're I don't know. It's not like the sort of Apple design where it is, again, it's very consistent. But in some ways, Apple design sets the standard. Volkswagen design doesn't really do that, other than setting...
CC did.
It
before.
Well, sort of. The CC aped a Mercedes. So
yeah, the CC was kind of like the pre-Sonata. Like, it brought stylish...
It was the Prelude? Oh, wait, that name's been used.
it was the stylish one of the bunch. It was way overpriced. But, you know, if you wanted style in that segment when it came out, what, 3 or 4 years ago, really all you had back then was the CC. Now everything else has gotten stylish, and the CC looks like a 2003 Jetta.
Yeah, I don't like the new CC nose, but in general, like, that car is still handsome, and I almost feel like, yes, their designs are handsome, but I don't think that they're anything other than Volkswagen being a giant conservative monolith bent on world domination, and they need to make cars that are going to play to the audience is actually going to spend money on it, which is why we have this newly diabetic Passat for the American market, because that's what we're going to buy. You know, a car with a giant trunk, a giant back seat, not much.
And a diesel. Huh?
Yeah, a diesel. Sort of, yeah. You know, everybody's going to buy the sort of moaning and pain 2.5 or the 2 liter if they're going to get a deal. Like, I can't imagine. Have you driven a Passat with a 2 liter?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's serviceable.
Serviceable. Yes. Always be serviced.
Always be serviced.
I think my biggest problem with the Volkswagen lineup right now are the Jetta and the Passat, how similar they look.
Oh, they're identical. Like when I was on the Passat drive, they had a Jetta chase vehicle and it was in red. And I was like, holy hell, I didn't know the Passat came in red. Like, it was just identical.
I think the biggest giveaway are like the taillights, and that's coming from someone like us, I guess. Like me.
Right, about cars for a living.
Yeah. Yeah. And it takes like cues like that to tell the difference. And if that's what Volkswagen wants, if they want, you know, the same car in two different flavors, then I guess they did it right. But I always had a problem with that. I thought the Jetta looked great. And then the Passat came along and I was just like, eh, now I don't like either one of the cars.
give me
a Golf TDI.
I think they both look good. I mean, that's, you're never going to go wrong being sort of classy, and that's what they are. But I, you know, to have folks where I can say, no, we really care about resale value. Oh, come on, care about resale value? No, only on lease vehicles do they care about resale value. And maybe that's true.
Toyota.
Well, Toyota's a different thing, though. Toyota, when you own the market like Toyota does, and every freaking segment that makes money, you can talk about your resale.
But I mean, aren't the top three sellers in the world auto market Toyota, Volkswagen, and General Motors?
Yes. Yes, they are. So, but I still, I don't know. I have a very North American perception of Volkswagen recall, and I just don't see that resale value is one of the things that they really, if they're looking on selling 800,000 cars a year by 2018, they don't care about resale. They care about now sale, not reselling a car that's already been bought or taking it in trade. And it, like, that's a completely different side of the equation. They need to create something that's going to be hot enough that people are going to buy. And do you think they're going to do that by design that is consistently conservative and staid? And I mean, maybe it's, you know, that familiarity and that thing that you know what you're going to get when you go to the Volkswagen store. You're going to get a Passat that looks like a Jetta.
Well, that's why the Accord and the Camry do so well. People know what that car is. They're not going to be shocked by it. You know, it has new headlights. It has a slightly different front end. Look at it, you know, Honda, or you know, it's a Toyota. It's the same thought process.
Yeah. Well, and so let's move to Toyotas that don't look like Toyotas. Scions.
Boom.
Yeah.
Rock on.
Apparently, Scion now wants to go after heavy metal fans to push sales. Am I the only one confused by the statement that they are opening a gallery in LA that will feature artwork by a UK-based artist named French?
I had to read that sentence like a ton UK of times to understand French. It.
Thank you.
Among others, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, fine. An art gallery, fine. I wouldn't consider much of what Scion offers art except perhaps the FRS, but even at that, I mean, the one you want to buy is in the Subaru store. So, what are they doing?
They're marketing, and I think this is one of the things that Scion does really, really well is market to demographics. Not surprised here at all.
I mean, props to Scion for supporting music. That's cool, because the way money has been vacuumed out of the music business, and they're sponsoring events and music festivals and things. So that's great. I just doesn't it seem like they're flailing? They're just like, instead of building cars that are compelling, they're trying too hard, which is, you know, they're actually off putting to people who are aware of current trends and, you know, the younger buyers that they want to grab, and the older buyers that don't actually pay attention to that stuff are less aware of those overt attempts to grab attention. And I'm going to make air quotes and say, and be hip.
Dan Ross said be hip.
That's what I did. Yeah, I mean, Scion is at least from what I see, they are less hip and more hip replacement. They're not a young person.
Oh, you were waiting all night to use that.
I was.
I could tell.
Gah! It's just, I don't know. It doesn't strike me as difficult to connect with car buyers. It's not a marketing campaign. It's like,
yes, no.
It's
not hard to connect with car buyers, people who like cars, but those people don't buy cars.
Right? Why don't they buy cars?
Because they're expensive.
Right.
And we're all
and they poor. Don't have jobs. And so it's very difficult if you're going to market to a consumer group that doesn't have jobs. How are you going to get them to buy your stuff? Nice catch.
Well done.
Yeah. You know, the boomers that actually buy Scions refuse to retire because they spent the last 40 years living their lives very selfishly, so they have nothing, so they can't retire. So now their grandkids, the kids that Scion actually wants to buy their cars, can't get jobs to buy the cars. So Scion, your problem isn't your cars. Your problem is your target audience that can't afford to buy any car, let alone yours. But
anytime you go after a target, I mean, you get the people like the Honda Element and all of Scion cars, you get the old people or just someone who says, oh, I want to look young. But
I didn't think about that.
Greatest comment from the comments on this post from Matt McKinley. Huge fan of metal and went to a show that was sponsored by Scion and thought it was very weird Scion was a sponsor. If I had to place a genre of music with that brand, it would be rap or hip-hop, not heavy metal. a neighbor of mine was has a Scion X whatever, and she is like 60 years old. She saw my 2010 Mazda 3 and was like, oh, your car is like mine. And I felt like saying, yeah, except it's newer, nicer, faster, and cooler. Anyway, I think Scion, I think rap, and old people, not metal and youth.
See, if I was going to peg a music scene for Scion, it would be like the rave, whatever you call that, the techno type stuff.
Stephen Ewing.
Oh man, I'm going to tell him to listen to this.
This Rob Zombie looking guy, though, getting out of an IQ.
Actually, Stephen Ewing has diverse tastes, from what I understand. But
I had a pinky nail that looked like that because I got it trapped in a brake caliper once.
Awesome.
Looked exactly like that.
Yeah, so we know what's coming. Our Scion ads with like the most obnoxious dubstep soundtrack, because that's really popular now. Advertising agency people think that's what the kids are listening to is dubstep.
Mercedes was using that in their press their press shows in Paris. It was like fantastic.
It's terrible. I hope it's better when you're on something, because it's not good when you're. And I love music of all kinds, but not that.
Dan Roth loves hip music, kids.
Hip replacement music. Come on, that was very.
I know you're proud.
You let all the air right out of my balloon, though. Come on, man.
Yeah, you shot your balloon down pretty good.
That's why I'm here.
So I don't know. I think that Scion, they need to just make cars that are universally pretty attractive to car buyers, not any particular one pigeonhole. And I know that.
The last three cars, they've done a really good job of making them an everyone car.
Which car would that be?
The new TC, the IQ, and the FRS. I mean, you don't have to make excuses. Like, if I bought an XB, I'd be embarrassed. I mean, it's just...
Yeah. It's got so much storage.
The only reason why I would buy an XB is if I was recreating that scene from Harold and Maude where they torched the E-Type. Like, that is it, and I realize it's a really old reference, so that's fine.
Yeah, that's the creepy-ass movie, by the way. Super creepy. Got tricked into watching that in college. I will never be the same.
I saw it in college. Film school, what can I say? but the IQ, you do need an excuse, because it's got a horrible, horrible transmission. Be like, oh yeah, the transmission just makes me want to go murder kittens. But it doesn't even get good mileage, but it's cute. Kinda. Not as cute as the kittens I smothered with a pillow. But it's like, why would you buy an IQ?
If you lived in Chicago.
Why would you buy a car if you lived in Chicago?
I don't know, but you can park your IQ anywhere.
Chicago is a huge city, huge metropolitan area, and it's not well served by public transportation all the time.
Yeah, I will always have a car wherever I go. I don't care, because I like cars, but... I'm just saying, in a metropolitan area, it's sort of like it's that chicken egg thing. Like, do you really need a car? Do you need a brand new car that's just going to get pretty much pillaged on the street? Wouldn't you prefer to buy an old, say, Volkswagen Golf, if they care about the resale value?
Jeep Patriots.
Yeah, it's the Jeep Patriot. The Jeep Patriot would be a good choice. It's a little big, but...
Sentence it to death by Chicago.
Yeah, isn't that what happened to the Edmund Fitzgerald?
Probably so.
Yeah.
The complete opposite side of the state.
Fitzgerald? Yeah. It sank in the lake. It was like Detroit.
Superior, though.
Yes. Yes. Superior, they said, never gives
up. Oh, we're off the rails. Let's focus. Q&A.
We're done. We should move to questions. Because we had a couple good ones. And I'll start with this one. What is the best all-around sports car for $10,000? Clearly not new. I see you scratching your chin.
You know,
early 90s 300ZX.
It's got to be the one I just bought. It's got to be the Miata. Got to be an NC Miata. You can find them for 10 grand with enough miles on them.
Would you say that's an all-arounder, though?
How would that not be an all-around sports car? He said sports car.
It's a pretty guess, but all-around, like, the Miata, one of the things it doesn't have a lot of power.
Sports cars don't, by definition, don't have to have a lot of power.
Okay. I'm not arguing. I think the Miata is delightful to drive. I was actually going to go with used Mustang GT.
Ugh.
Okay.
I would go with My pick is the last generation 300ZX. That wedge. Wedge shape with T-tops.
No. Don't get me wrong. That is the first car I ever like took photographs of with the zoom lens, and I learned all about depth of field and how it looks.
That would have been an awesome Mad Lib sentence. The first car that I took, fill in the blank. Anyway.
I had a very sedate youth. Like, I didn't really do anything crazy like you, Zach. But I love that 300ZX, but there's no way that's...
That car would be a nightmare to own these days.
Yeah.
Nightmare. Especially the twin turbos. Every twin turbo 300ZX I've seen has either been on fire or or just in pieces.
Yeah,
that's such a broad question, because you could go... You know, classic muscle car. You go anything.
He said sports car. Means
so. My pick of the Mustang is completely off base. Then I apologize for that, because that's clearly not a sports car. That's a pony car. So
yeah,
if you're looking for understeer and drag racing, Mustang's your car. Otherwise, yeah, I mean the Miata does not suck.
No, yeah, I don't think it does.
They're interesting.
You could totally pick up a Boxster at this point. What? I was just looking at one for $9,500.
What year? Like
first? It was like, yeah, it was first generation. Yeah.
Wow, that's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but see, Porsches are built like brick outhouses too. So that, like, of all the cars, like, you can buy like a Ferrari 308 for like $20,000, but it's gonna.
98 Boxster, $9,500. You could 123,000 miles. You could totally pick up an S2000. Would be really solid.
S2000. Yeah.
I was thinking, like, if you wanted something more interesting, you could go like an MR2 Spider.
True.
Not really my thing. I would prefer actually the 95, the second generation MR2.
But I wonder what your 911 you could get for $10,000.
911.
You probably could, actually. Or like a 335 IS or 325 IS or a...
See, 911s are hard because they don't tend to depreciate, really.
You know, you can get a 70s one, you'd be fine.
Those are up, though, because the end of the 70s, you had the 911 Super Carrera. And that's, like, generally, it's affordable, but that's one of the best 911s, if not the best era of 911s. And they're, you're not going to find one for $10,000.
That's probably true.
You'll find one, but it'll need stuff. It'll need
totally rusted out.
Yeah. So, you know, I that is just. I'm looking at that Boxster now. We should share that with Ustream. The rest of the podcast suckers, you're gonna have to listen to Ustream. but I'm intrigued by the idea of a $10,000 Porsche, because other exotics. Are gonna
call a $10,000 what?
Porsche.
There you go.
You said Porsche.
Did I say Porsche? I was going fast. I was mumbling. Pardon me. What's you know?
Yeah, no, there are a lot of really good options out there. The ones we've tossed you are obviously convertibles, just because it seems like that's a sweet spot price wise for those cars. I don't, you know, you're probably looking at replacing tops and the rest of that, but you know. Keep that in mind. There are other solid cars out there. You could probably pick up a 350Z at this point.
Well, yeah, but no.
In that area. It's still a perfectly fine car. Drives well.
No,
it's got a freaking VQ, man. What do you want?
3.5-liter VQ, and it's...
So what?
VQ is another one of those engines that's got, like, horsepower up here and torque down there.
Yeah. That's right.
It's And the 350Z is... No, that car... Skip right over that and buy a 370Z, because it's so better.
You know what you can't do is buy a 370Z for $10,000 is what you can't do.
Right, so you shouldn't buy a Z.
All right.
Glad we had this chat.
All right.
Speaking of the Z, do you think the next generation Z will go back to the basics of the original, the 240Z, to compete with the successful GT86 FRS BRZ, or will it stay where it is with a lighter, more refined 370Z and get split up into two different cars, like a 240SX, 240Z, 300, that kind of thing? That's our buddy RMT1, who always asks multi-part complicated smart questions. So,
you know, everything that I'm hearing says that the next Z will be a smaller, lighter, potentially four-cylinder Z, a 240 type Z. That kind of breaks my heart because in my eyes, the Z has always been more of a grand tourer than a little, you know, cutting machine like the FRS. I think personally it would make more sense to split him and bring the 240SX back or a similar model where you have a lightweight, low cost, you know, all engine and suspension machine, front engine, rear wheel drive, and then the higher trim, more grand touring, more, you know, slightly more luxurious Z. But that's just me.
See, the idea of a smaller, lighter Z car than the 370, that just seems amazing to me, because the difference, they went from the 350 to the 370, that car mm-hmm. lost so much weight and size and became so much better car.
Yeah, they hacked like 6 inches out of the middle of it.
So. Yeah, and I think if they went smaller, because still the 370, it's like, does it compete with the Mustang? What does it compete with? Like, I think the Z is still an enthusiast car. People buy it because it's a Z.
They buy it because they can't afford a Cayman, and that's as close as you're going to come.
No, I think that, you know, I think like any car, the Z has a serious following, and people will always want the Z. I don't think Z buyers necessarily were like, you know what, I really like the Cayman, but this is just such a better deal. How could I not go with the Z?
Yeah. Respectful silence.
Bam.
Boom.
I am done.
You just threw his headset.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so fine. Next Mustang is supposedly offering a 300-plus horsepower turbo 4. What other Fords do you want to see that engine in?
None.
Oh, come on.
If it's Ford, it's going to go in everything. That's the new Ford way.
I know.
You'll see it in the F-150, the Taurus.
See, here's the thing. I want to see that engine. If they're going to put it in everything with a 6-speed manual as the only transmission, which is, I realize, lunacy.
Send me a postcard from Fantasyland.
I'm just saying, I mean, put that engine in a Fusion with a 6-speed stick and you've got a
car that won't sell at all.
Yes. Fantastic. But a car that would just will be rapturous auto riders about it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, fine. Well,
I do keep waiting to see an SVT Fusion. I really do. Like, I'm sure they would sell. They sold SVT Contours, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, but they didn't have anything else at that point. I think the SVT Fusion would be a tough sell, actually, because it's in this place where you've got a car that's sort of affordable in the family car sense. You know, it's a mainstream car, so if it starts to get too expensive, they can't really make any money on it. So the margins are so tight that I don't think they could actually sell one the way it's supposed to be, the way it really should be, for the money that it would need to sell for.
Like the SHO?
Yeah, but the SHO is a little different. And also not really terribly fun. it's a big car with lots of horsepower and lots of weight. And very tiny brakes. Very tiny. Although I hear they fixed that. I haven't driven the latest
SHO. Yeah, actually, they're quite sizable.
Because they have the new track pack, too. They probably mm-hmm. upped the brakes on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we'll move on to... So, well, I guess we'll stay a little bit on the Ford tip. We got some email questions. We'll start with this one, and I have another good one, where the guy says we can't use his name, so... Charlie! Oh, I'm sorry. No. GM has the Corvette, or GM has had the Corvette. Chrysler has now the refreshed Viper, but there is no Ford supercar. They have the GT500 662 horsepower engine to work with, and if the Viper can do well alongside the almighty Corvette, wouldn't it make sense to bring forth another Ford GT or a new Ford supercar?
Only if they can make money at it. I mean, that seems to be Ford's, I know, shocking, right, for a business to take that stance, but that seems to be Ford's new line. Like, if it makes sense financially, they'll do it, but otherwise they're not into taking bizarre risks. I mean, this isn't the company that's going out and snapping up Swedish automakers for fun. I mean, it's just...
They did that.
I know they did that, and then they were like, wait, we're bleeding cash, we better stop that, and they shed all the rest of it. I would love, God have mercy, I would love nothing more than to see a Ford GT roll out. But I don't see it happening.
I think you need some stuff to actually be in the past to make it great. You know, to actually appreciate it. Because if everything that's awesome always stayed in production and was always here, you'd take it for granted and it wouldn't be awesome. You have to miss it. So,
I did read that Ford is thinking about making that little EcoBoost car, the 1 liter EcoBoost, that Ariel Adams type vehicle.
True. Yeah, it's a production vehicle. I heard that.
That'd be pretty tricky, like kind of like the Prowler almost.
Except for
actually fast.
Yeah, and fun. Not terrible.
But, I mean, for the 90s, the Prowler
was,
I mean,
awful.
That was ballsy.
No, it was a bold move, but it was horrible dreck.
Yeah, you know, speaking of cars that needed a V8, it was a Prowler.
Yeah.
Big time.
It's true.
But it had auto stick.
They invented that crap, and now we've got it in everything. Like, oh, but it has a manual gate. A, it's unresponsive, and B, I don't want to shift it. It's an automatic transmission. It should shift itself. It should do it correctly. And well,
preach it, preacher man, preach it.
Damn it. our man who cannot be named, Voldemort, wrote us, and he says he's starting a new car search and he needs some help. So he drove on Friday a 2013 Subaru Impreza 5-door Sport Premium. I am very sorry. I hope your ears have stopped ringing. While I think, he says, and I know your opinion of it, and while I think you might be slightly harsh, I didn't fall in love with the car. That's because it's not a car to really fall in love with. I can't move much more than that. In terms of the Impreza, I was not impressed. But he did like the combo of fuel efficiency, all-wheel drive, and the price for the features was good. What he's looking for, are you taking notes? This is a multi-part here.
Taking notes.
Okay. He'd prefer a hatchback and an automatic transmission. He's been driving manual since he's 16, and he's now 27, and would like to switch. Blasphemer. Just...
Don't insult the reader. Just keep going.
I'm not insulting him. I'm just...
You just called him a blasphemer. That is the definition of insulting.
All right. You're right. Okay, I just... Perhaps I've been spending too much time in... I love manuals. I'll drive in traffic. Yeah,
we know what you do for a living.
This
Come
guy's
on,
not me.
It.
This guy's
read
not
the question.
Me. So, all right, fine. His price range tops out at $24,000. No more. His wife wants him to test drive a GTI. Nice. And his father wants him to try a Golf. And he's paranoid about cars, so he's slightly scared of VW and German reliability. So looking around, he can't find much that he actually wants in his price range. What would we recommend? Any thoughts on the Elantra 5-door?
How much is the Juke?
Oh, the Juke you can get for 24. The Juke starts at like 19, doesn't it?
Because I always consider that they try and label it a crossover. I think that would be a perfect little hatchback.
That's essentially what it is. It's a tall little hatchback.
Yeah, it's fun to drive. It'd be more fun to drive than the Elantra GT.
Mini Cooper.
Ooh,
for 24?
They start at $20,400.
Yeah,
they go. That's a base Cooper. Just buy a base Cooper. If you're looking at an Elantra, you clearly don't care how it drives. So buy a Cooper.
And the base Cooper clearly does not drive. Terrible. I mean, it's not bad.
It's perfectly fine. It's serviceable.
It's not
perfectly
a Cooper good. S.
But it's between a base Cooper and a Juke, I'd still go with the Juke.
I was the same Mazda 3.
Yeah, Juke's got to have premium, though. And man, it's a thirsty machine.
It is. That's true.
Thirsty machine.
You know, the Mazda 3 with the Skyactiv.
Great car.
That is a fantastic car. And the automatic in that is actually really, really efficient.
Yeah, no, and it doesn't suck to drive.
No.
That's I'm backing that horse. I'm backing that horse.
That's a good pick.
Yeah. So there, we have solved your problem. Let us know how you
buy a Mazda 3. We get the bird dog.
So I think that wraps it up. We've blathered on long enough. I'd like to remind everybody that the Autoblog podcast is brought to you by TireRack.com for tires, lighting, shocks, and springs, and all kinds of other cool stuff. Check them out, TireRack.com. So, yeah, we'll catch you guys next week. You know where to hit us up at podcast@autoblog.com. We are aware of the download issue in iTunes on certain devices. We're working on it, so... yes, we hear you. There's no good way to sort of reply to an iTunes comment, but please keep leaving them in iTunes for us so we can know how we're doing. And yeah, I'll see you next week.
See you then, guys.
Have a good night.